Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron, time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Markets with Sean Hackett. Sean, how are you doing this morning?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We're a little far away from each other today, but
Yes, we are. Yeah. Florida to Montana is quite a haul, so there's a little bit of a distance there, but there's some weather events going on right now, I guess, that are kind of shaping the market here a little bit. Things are kind of starting to correct out of this wet, rainy pattern that we've seen. Still a lot of rain in the forecast, but there's it's not as widespread as it has been in the past. You have a low pressure developing there pretty much in your backyard. That's going to have a pretty big effect on the Florida Panhandle, the Deep South. Maybe it looks like it's going to scoot over into Louisiana and Texas there, but market's just been kind of slopping around here a little bit. You know, we were up pretty big on Monday, and then today we've had 2 days of down. Started up, I think we're 3 cents down for the day after closing 6.5 down yesterday on corn. So looks like the market is kind of at that place where it needs a little more positive news, I guess. Coming up, we got the report coming out Thursday that could have some effect on what we see happening in the market, but I don't know. It's just kind of a standstill, I guess, right now.
It is a standstill. I mean, basically, we've moved beyond the weather market that we were in, and we're in search of a new story. You know, a new variable, a new piece of information to drive the market one way or the other. And obviously, this week's USDA report shouldn't be too significant because they're going to go with the numbers that they said in the planting intentions report, which most people are highly questionable about, and so one would have to, you know, kind of discard much of what is said there. So we're going to have to wait till August 12th to get maybe a better number and maybe some more clear direction on at least what the planted acres were. And by that time, we'll at least had enough weather through enough of the corn pollination to know a little better about what the yields on corn might be looking like. So I think, you know, we're still in this period where the market just doesn't know what to do, and it needs another few weeks before, you know, it might start to make some bets one way or the other. And so we're just kind of in this kind of dismal sideways trading range waiting for direction, just like you said. And weather is improving a little bit. It's not perfect, but it's better than it was. And we are actually seeing some pretty significant changes in the atmosphere. What I mean by that is that the El Nino has been driving U.S. weather all year long. And that El Nino has really started to weaken in the last 2 weeks. And we measure the atmospheric response by what's called global angular momentum, which is the upper level winds anomalies. When they're very positive, it's an El Nino response. And we were very, very positive all year long, giving us this cold, wet weather. And we have dropped off big time. We're actually expected to go into significant negative global angular momentum. And that means that we're actually going to be trading, or the atmosphere is actually going to be acting more like a La Nina here, if it were to persist. And that means warmer temperatures, drier temperatures, you know, a warm, drier pattern. And so we're kind of looking out for that if that persists, you know, maybe we move into a hot, dry pattern in August and kind of clip the corn market as it's trying to pollinate. We talked about this a couple of times before, Casey, how we can go from wet, 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 and then dry as we shift the jet stream around. And we might be heading for this big shift from we can't stop the rain from falling, and then we won't be able to buy a drop of rain when we really need it. It's really something we're worried about right now, because it's a big, big change in the atmosphere that we haven't seen at all this year until this last couple of weeks. So it's not a market mover today, because the warmer weather is being viewed as bearish right now, but it could be very quickly a bullish factor if it persists into August. So,
yeah, and I've kind of started to notice that we've had back home in Nebraska, we had a couple weeks there where we've had some pretty strong pretty strong daytime highs, and not a an old man tell me once that if there's still a lot of snow in the mountains and the weather stays warm down and in the valley, then you have a large, you're going to have a stormy summer. And that's exactly what we've had. You know, we've had, there's still tons of snow up in the mountains that hasn't melted off yet. That cold air coming off the mountains, hitting that warm air coming. We've had 3.5 weeks, maybe almost now, maybe even 4 weeks of every single night, some level of severe storms come through my immediate area. And it's not just like, oh, a little thunder, a little lightning. We're talking golf ball size hail. We're talking torrential downpours, all that fun stuff. And that finally came to an end about yesterday. And it's kind of started to calm down anyway. And we'll see what happens. But the warm temperatures are there. And if where we're at doesn't really matter because of heavily irrigated anyway. So actually this time of the year, farmers prefer it to quit raining so they can just control the amount of water they put on their crops and what have you. So it's going to be a crazy fun ride, and we'll see how things shape out. But, you know, one thing we talk about a lot on here is the cotton market and how that affects with the overall global market. So the Feds came out here pretty much last week and kind of hinted around that they are for sure going to drop interest rates by a half or a quarter point, and they've even talked about maybe doing it three times throughout the course of the year. Still, I mean, you see some rallies in the stock market when they do that, but it's kind of been back and forth. The overall global economy is really starting to slow down. You're starting to see some really good signs of that. I don't know, what do you think is going to happen with the overall economy when you start taking a look at this? If they do drop interest rates by, you know, the course of a year by 0.75 points, which would basically put us back to where we started at the beginning of 2018, right? Isn't that kind of about right?
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of effect do you think that's going to have on the markets, and what do you think, do you think there could be some positive moves there when you start looking at cotton because of maybe some quantitative easing when it comes to the overall economy?
Well, I mean, there's two different things. There's the lowering of interest rates, and then there's the monetary levers that they pull, whether it's quantitative easing. I've ever heard that they're going to look to fix long-term interest rates and not allow them to rise so that the U.S. government doesn't go bankrupt because of interest payments. You know, they're looking at ways to keep interest rates low because the debts are so high, we simply can't have 7% interest rates without having the debt interest payments consume almost the entire budget that the U.S. government has. And so all of that is crazy stuff. But so overall, remember, it's not just what we do. It's what the EU does. It's what Japan does. It's what all the central banks have come out over the last 30 and 45 days and said, we're going to start doing something. Now, of course, that something is the devil's in the details. How much, when, and exactly what. But clearly we are moving into a market, a monetary easing cycle again. But it takes time for that to translate into a better economic activity. When you typically look at when central banks start to lower rates and start to print money again, there's easily a six-month, even a nine-month lag between when they start doing something and when the real economy starts reacting. Of course, markets don't wait for the first economic data to show that things are improving. So if you remember in 2009, early 2010, when all the central banks went crazy with printing money, markets went up for over a year and the economy was horrible.
Right.
And then the economy started doing better. So there's a delicate balance between when the markets start moving and when the actual real economy starts showing tangible evidence of doing better. So our best guess is that we think markets, if we start, Casey, you there?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. If we start easing monetary policy now, and so do the other central banks, I would think that the markets would start to react from the fourth quarter onward. I think it wouldn't be immediate. I think we would want to see more information on what they're doing, follow through. But I'm pretty comfortable in saying that the fourth quarter onward, if we were to see this global monetary easing push, that the markets would start to react. But I don't think the real economy would show strong evidence of turning until probably the summer of next year, maybe the fall of next year. But the markets will probably start turning in the fourth quarter. That's my best guess at this point.
Good. Yeah, Friday's job report came out, and there was, I think we had 300 some thousand jobs, but the unemployment rate rose to 3.9% from 3.4%. So that could be some seasonal stuff there. You know, there could be some farm labor stuff in that with the way things are, you can start seeing some things there. But I guess my next question is, let's talk about China a little bit here. If we're in contraction, and the rest of the world is in a contraction too when it comes to their economy, so is China. There's no doubt about that. Do you feel like maybe if we start heading down that path more towards some sort of global recession, that could push a China-U.S. deal maybe closer to being done, just so they could have some level of agreement there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think right now, Trump has been comfortable in not feeling the urgency to do anything because our economy has been sort of hanging in there and being the best, the best market economy out there. And so from that perspective, we've felt we have a strong hand and we don't need to press the issue. The Chinese, obviously, they have felt, that we're vulnerable to agriculture, and that if they press hard on agriculture, that that would win us out. But I think that if both countries, the two largest economies in the world, start feeling intense domestic pressure economically and from their constituencies, I think they will quickly resolve, anything that's stopping them from getting a deal done. So in some sick, demented way, we almost want a downturn to get this deal done. If you really think it through, I don't really see it happening unless that happens. I really think the pressure on both sides is to be such that they both have a reason to get this done economically, because that's always what drives these things. Right now, it's he said that, she said that. We're, it's posturing, but I don't see any reason why any side has to settle right now.
Something we don't talk about much, but let's talk about we've talked about global markets quite a bit when you start looking at what we see happening out around the world. But South America looks like they're having a pretty good crop. I mean, their last corn crop went well. Their beans are coming out nice. Argentina had a great rebound from what happened last year in their epic drought they had. And then when it came time to harvest, they had record rainfall. So they kind of got hit with both sides of that stick. But it sounds like to me, from what I've read and what I can see, that South American markets South American crops are doing well this year, and there's going to be some decent bushels that come out of there.
Corn exports in the month of June out of Brazil, for example, up sixfold year over year for the same month last year. So they're selling like crazy. And that's, of course, is to the Chinese advantage, by the way, because right now they can go to the Brazilians, they can go to the Argentinians and buy all the grain they want for now, and they don't really need to buy it from us. And so that is their advantage. Of course, that doesn't last forever. The rate that they're selling, come the fall, they won't have that much to sell anymore, and then the Chinese will need to come back to the U.S. market. But for now, there's huge supplies coming out of there, and there's going to be large exports, and it's just going to keep our export market in tough shape with the trade war continuing onward, which I don't see ending right now. And that's a negative. The weather's been a bullish factor, but let's not lose sight that the demand side of the factor, the export side of the factor, is bearish and remains bearish and will continue to be bearish, at least for the next several months. And that, that is probably another reason that's keeping the market from running away to the upside, is that they have such large supplies down there that's capping the ability for the U.S. market to run too far right now.
Yep. Okay, so let's talk about the areas that we've talked about that had drought around the world. So we've talked about India and Southeast Asia, kind of looking at some some drought areas when it comes to rice and cotton. We talked about Australia and the drought that they've had for 5 years. It seems like they just can't get a break down there. But with the shift in the El Nino effects, do you see maybe some opportunity to get some more rain in those drought-stricken areas over there?
It's a little more complicated in Asia because there's two important forces that really drive moisture on the monsoon. One is El Nino, La Nina. Remember, we're still in a weak El Nino, but the atmosphere is responding not El Nino-like. So it's not like we have a full-blown La Nina and the atmosphere is acting La Nina. It's we're sort of weakening the El Nino effect. And to that extent, it does bring more moisture into Asia, or could. The other factor is what's called the Indian Ocean Dipole. That's the sea surface temperatures from the west to the east side of India. And when they're positive or moderately positive like they are now, that tends to produce or tends to encourage somewhat of a drier outcome in Asia. So I guess what we're thinking and what we're feeling is that we do think that places like maybe Southeast Asia could get some more rainfall. But we do not think that it will mean that much for India or for China. We think that those patterns are going to be more impacted by the Indian Ocean Dipole, not as much by the weakening El Nino. And as such, the dry weather patterns that are in place in North China and in central Northwest India are likely to persist at least through most of the important part of the main growing season before there'd be any material changes there. So we're still pretty much on board that the key Asian countries are still going to see a drier than normal period, but certainly we're moving towards a more La Nina environment as we move into the years ahead, and that does mean Asia is going to get very wet, but it's still too early to say Asia is going to be turning materially to change the outcome that we see right now.
Yep. All right, let's jump over and talk about cattle market for a little bit. We are in pretty much the peak drilling season that we should be in right now. Actually, summer kind of started late with all the weather we had late spring, early summer, kind of in driving that whole grilling market a little bit. Cattle market's been kind of back and forth here, kind of got beat up here later this part of the week and last week. So I guess talk about the cattle market we see happening there and how do you see that playing out here coming up through the month of July?
Well, I mean, I still think, it's all about, when is the African swine fever demand going to be felt by the United States, not only in the beef market, but also in the pork market. And so I'd like to take a step back. And so why has this not happened? Why has this massive shortfall in China not led to, at this point, the kind of demand we were expecting to see? Why has it been delayed? And I think there's two primary reasons. One, the problem is so much worse in China than we thought. People think that if you liquidate pigs because you're afraid of African swine fever, that gets removed from the market. It doesn't get removed from the market. It hits the market. It's available to the market. It's supply that the market has to eat through before it has to refill the coffers. Now, of course, if you don't replace those hogs, you don't replace that pork, you have to then, there's a massive hole you have to refill. So our original base case at the beginning of the year is that we were going to be maximum 15% herd liquidation. We're already at 30-35% on our way to 40. So all that herd liquidation on the pig side, on the hog side, has been extra supply and has taken longer for the market to eat through it. Our view is that we're about through the overhang and now the Chinese need to refill what has been lost. Secondly, the China trade war, the tariffs on U.S. pork specifically, deterred them from buying U.S. pork and forced them or caused them to buy pork from other sources when those sources were at least available enough to fill the gap that was there. Interesting enough, though, is that the Chinese put in place an exemption program that if you, as a pork importer, went for an exemption and were accepted, that come July, you could import U.S. pork with no tariffs on it whatsoever. That starts now. And so we expect to see pork imports start to grow rapidly as now those tariffs are removed, and we're at the point where that overhang of supply is behind us. And so the limit up move yesterday in hogs, too early to say that one day is a trend, but it exactly fits in when you would think that U.S. pork exports to China would start to really pick up as these tariffs are removed and they're now moving through the overhang. So we're pretty optimistic that the demand finally for U.S. pork and U.S. beef is going to pick up markedly, not only because of this supply overhang being removed, but also because of this tariff policy that the Chinese went through that should start to really bring that kind of demand in, because the situation is extremely serious. It hasn't gone away. And they're going to need to buy a lot of U.S. pork and beef And so we feel we possibly we've made the final lows here, and we're ready for round two of the move that began last year and faded when everybody kind of pushed the dial too soon and got caught buying into this demand side factor too early. So overall, we think that's the driver here, and we think it's we're encouraged that yesterday might be the beginning of something more.
Yeah. All right, so dairy market, you start to see some pretty extreme volatility there, some big swings in the day when you start looking at class three milk, and that usually is a sign that there is a opportunity to make some money there where they haven't made it before. Start to see some upward movement here. Maybe they've got the milk supply kind of closer to some demand curve moves there. So talk about what you see happen in the dairy market and what you see happening going into this fall here, where we're going to see, we're looking at silage and those different things being cut for not only the dairy market, but also for the feedlot market. So talk about what you see happening there and how, what effect you see on dairy right now.
Well, there's the short-term impact. I mean, we've had prices are approaching 18, on fall contracts, and, they were, 14, 15 not too long ago. So we've had a very sizable move, and that's basically at a five-year high. So this would be a place that the market should pause and probably correct. We've been seeing production in Europe start to improve significantly. Prices have started to really fall there. GDT prices in New Zealand have fallen four straight auctions in a row. So the only place where prices have not started to fall is in the U.S. because U.S. production has been so constrained. We have two negative milk production growth months out of the last three, which is really unusual. So I think the near-term picture is that we're probably going to have a correction. I do think that production in the U.S. is going to improve as we move into the fall, as the herd liquidation that took place early in the year subsides. And farmers are making more money. Producers are making more money on the margin. They're going to try to push a little more milk out, try to make a little extra money. So my overall short-term advice is that this $18 level, farmers want to make sure they're fairly well sold there, because I do think there could be a short-term setback. Beyond that, though, we're pretty excited about what's going on in 2020, and that this is not the top. It's a top and a pathway to a much higher price level. Because what we see happening with African swine fever, with the rise in cattle prices, and the challenges that we see with not only feed physical supply availability, but also the quality of that availability. If you feed dairy cows less than good quality grain, their production falters. So this sets up for a much bigger problem as you move into 2020. And so we would be more interested in getting ourselves sold, let's say, into the end of the year, less so for 2020, and that would be our advice to dairy farmers who are thinking about what to do and finally have prices that they can actually works for their balance sheet. They should sell that now and make sure they lock that in, put some money into their businesses, but be a little wary about selling too much in 2020. We still think the best is still yet to come out ahead.
Right on. All right, Sean, good information as usual. Plenty of stuff going on here. Folks want to reach out to you and get some information from you or just pick your brain about stuff. What's the best way to do that?
Website at Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors.com. All kinds of information on there, interviews, webinars, phone number, email address, any way to contact us. We're glad to help. We're here to help. And we think, and hopefully they, in looking at our information, they see, a pathway forward that we might be able to, make them handle their operations a little better and take advantage of some of this volatility we're finally starting to see in markets after a long period of not seeing it. So we're encouraged and hope that we can help your listeners in doing that.
Right on. All right, Sean, well, take care of yourself. Enjoy that warm Florida summer heat and humidity here, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Casey. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Nellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here.